You are listening to Expanding Horizons, the podcast of the Unitarian Church of South Australia, a home of progressive spirituality and free religious thought and action since 1854. Views expressed in these podcasts are those of the speaker and are not intended to represent the position of the church itself or of the worldwide Unitarian Universalist movement. For more information, visit unitariansa.org.au.
It's good to be back with you. So that's me there up in my workplace at the Royal Adelaide Hospital, and I'm an ordained minister of religion in the Uniting Church. And during the past few months, I've been very busy, particularly in intensive care and critical care, as you would have imagined, directly caring for some of our COVID families at this terrible time. So good to be with you. And the other connection that I have is that I continue to be the ministerial supervisor of your now outgoing minister, the Reverend Rob McPherson, and that's a delight as we dialogue together about the joys and challenges of ministry. So welcome also to those joining us on podcast services on Zoom. And sometimes the people listening on podcasts can feel a bit out of things, so I'll be adding in a little bit of extra commentary as we go along. Of course, the people on podcast have the advantage of not seeing my beautiful face. And they also have the pause button. One of our staff members said, "Look, I'm looking forward to going back to church, but I think I missed the pause button." Well, our theme is about feeling unwell, and maybe a few of us have been a bit sleep deprived this week as we've been, what's it called, doom scrolling through Twitter. We have a lot of things on our mind. Maybe we have families in the US or the UK or Europe as COVID once again returns. And maybe we're not feeling our best at this time when our weather changes from one thing to another. But hopefully we'll move towards this state of a more flourishing state of being. And maybe the service today will help us to move slightly along that line of feeling a little bit weller. This very impressive sounding Greek term, eudaimonia, it's one that you can astonish your friends with. It's used a great deal by Aristotle and Plato and the ancient world of philosophy about the goals of our life and what makes life meaningful for us, which is a lot of what I do as a spiritual care chaplain with our patient. What does this community mean as a place of meaning-making and drawing people together? So as we begin to lead us into our first choral piece, we will ring the bell. And as we do so, let's release into this moment, into this sacred time. Well, all our music this morning is from J.S. Bach, guaranteed to make us feel better. So, Margaret, please take us away. Thank you so much. On this day, all around the world, chalices will be lit. And this lighting reminds us of our communion with all of those Unitarian and Universalist churches throughout the world. So some responsive words. We gather conscious of our hopes and desires, our vision for the planet. We gather conscious of our own failings, the loose ends, all that is unresolved in our lives, our griefs, our loves, our glorious fallibilities, together. As participants in a universalist spirituality, we will strive to make this a community of healing and hope and be here for each other. So for those listening by podcast, we weave you into this as well. And we're conscious also that we meet on the land of the Kaurna people and we acknowledge their ancestors, past, present, and to come. We acknowledge their spiritual connection with the land, and we also acknowledge that in many parts of the world this is Remembrance Sunday and also the beginning of NAIDOC Week. So we have a blessing of each other now in the holy human. So maintaining your spatial distancing, please turn to those next to you, place your hands together, pause for a moment and bow and smile and saying, blessing be upon you. You see how much better when we smile and put our hands together. It's beautiful, isn't it? So if you're at home and you're listening while you're driving the car, please keep your hands on the wheel. But you can bless the drivers around you, particularly the driver who cut me off on the way in this morning. If you're ironing the clothes, please take care. Or lying in bed, you can give a little wave to the world. Let's keep blessing our life. So we're not able to sing this morning, so we're going to do some holy humming. I'm sure that we love to hum. And do you know what? It makes us feel so much better because when we hum, so don't open your mouth because that's not a good idea in this, we listen to our throat, we open up our chest, and this wonderful vagus nerve that wanders through our body, connecting our gut to our brain, we give that a little bit of a massage as well. So let's do some humming together. Feel the vibration. And put your hands up by ears to listen to others as you sing, as you hum. And then put your hands over your ears so you can listen to yourself. A little bit louder. Beautiful. Thank you very much indeed. That's a picture of a lovely windmill or wind pump in Finland where I was a few years ago. And please keep humming, keep smiling. And it does make us feel better, doesn't it? And you know what? One of the earliest sounds in the universe, or the beginning of language, lies in that humming. It's thought that people hummed to one another at the beginning of human language. So keep up that humming. So we have some candles for sharing, a wonderful tradition in many communities throughout the world. So you can't speak into the microphone. So if you do come forward, please, if you want to share, keep it brief. And send the words out. And then we come to our reading for today. It's The Second Coming by William Butler Yeats. Thank you, Jenny.
Turning and turning in the widening gyre, the falcon cannot hear the falconer. Things fall apart, the centre cannot hold. Mere dim tide is loosed, and everywhere the ceremony of innocence is drowned. The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Surely some revelation is at hand. Surely the second coming is at hand. The second coming. Hardly are those words out when a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi troubles my sight. Somewhere in the sands of the desert, a shape with a lion body and the head of a man, a gaze blank and pitiless as the sun, is moving its slow thighs, while all about it reel shadows of the indignant desert birds. The darkness drops again, but now I know that 20 centuries of stony sleep were vexed to nightmare by a rocking cradle. And what rough beast, its hour come round at last, slouches toward Bethlehem to be born.
Thank you. It's a somber poem, isn't it? Just the other day, I was driving to work and I followed behind a car with one of those religious stickers on the back. It said, in the event of the rapture, this car may be unattended. But I'm sure it felt very serious to the driver. But this is not this kind of second coming at all. Very appropriate for W.B. Yeats, the symbolist interested in the occult as well, Irish nationalist with a lifelong interest in the arts, a passion about spirituality, a love for land, a whole series of complex personal relationships. So William Butler Yeats is one of those bridge people between the 19th and the 20th century, born in Ireland, then as now a bitterly divided country, from the Protestant ascendancy, adopting a Republican and nationalist understanding, later being elected as a senator for the new Republic of Ireland. But influenced by religious radicals like William Blake, like Swedenborg as well. So W.B. Yeats had a mixed career and reception as a poet. His symbolism didn't go down well with everyone. But this poem, The Second Coming, is one that resounds uncomfortably and has often been quoted. And I hadn't understood this until recently, but our new president not hold. We won't make any mention of that, the beast slouching to Bethlehem to be born. So what was happening to W.B. Yeats? What was the life situation that this poem came out of? Because very often when we want to write music or write poetry or journal or explore our spiritual roots, it comes out of an experience of being confronted with the deep unwellnesses in our world or in our own lives. There was the bitterness of Ireland and the Easter Rising and what went on after that before independence. There was the pandemic, the Spanish flu that killed so many. W.B. Yeats's wife, Georgie Hyde Lees, was pregnant and had the Spanish flu with a very small chance of recovering. She did recover. But at that particular time, Georgie Hyde Lees, a remarkable woman, was W.B. Yeats's muse. And she engaged in a process of automatic spiritual writing, which you can look up, which is a kind of inspired religious writing. So she was a mystic as well. A perennial poem constantly echoing. But the arts for us, particularly as a progressive, searching spiritual community, can serve as a kind of scripture and tradition. A point of dialogue, of exploration in community. A resource on which we can draw, particularly at time of joys and of suffering. And in this church we have a wonderful group, the Lectio group, that draws upon that same understanding. And even the tradition of preaching that goes back to the time of the rabbis and beyond, it wasn't invented by the church, is a form of exploring tradition and exploring texts and music for the journey ahead. So the title, The Second Coming, and we have the first verse up here in front of us, we shouldn't be fooled here that this is a kind of a Christian poem at all. But it does pick up on Christian themes, including the idea of the Second Coming, which is not unique to Christianity or Judaism. But there is a resonance right at the centre to the words of Jesus in the Gospel about fakes and lies and false pretenders and a society divided against itself. Of course, Jesus, if he wrote those words or spoke those words, which is highly likely, is speaking about his own nation, bitterly divided, and that of the Roman Empire as well. The beast that comes at the end of the poem, in the final line, the rough beast slouches towards Bethlehem to be born. Well, that maybe, again, is a reference to the book of Revelation. Again, a text that haunts us in our society. So our poet here, W.B. Yeats, sets up a kind of a metaphoric landscape for us to explore. And it has about it a sense of wheels and cycles of time constantly revolving. W.B. Yeats helped to translate the Upanishads. And in ancient Greek philosophy, as in Hinduism, there is that sense that time is not linear, running along from beginning to end. That's really a very Jewish and Christian understanding of the creation, and it'll be wrapped up at the end. But of great cycles of time circling around, and times of loss and grief, and times of building and of love as well. And I'm conscious that our own Unitarian Universalist symbol is that of the wheel. On the outer rim, we have that understanding of the interdependence of the cosmos, that sense that everything lives and breathes and connects together, which is a spiritual understanding about how life is. And then right at the center, remember that our author says the center cannot hold, we have respect for the dignity and purpose of every individual human becoming. Now, there is something that we draw from our Jewish and Christian heritage, but it is something that we in our culture see as the center of what makes us a civilized, humane society. And our author is saying the center cannot hold. The center cannot hold. And to go back to our wheel at the moment that I've put up, and you'll appear on a slide later on, we have those pathways in. How do we create the kind of society and community that models something different where the center can hold? So for each of us, sometimes it's hard to hold on to that sense of being centered and grounded in itself. When we experience a personal disaster, when somebody betrays us or lets us down, or takes us down. When we experience difficulties in our family or in our spiritual community. I'm on corps chaplain at the moment, and I went in yesterday for an older person in their late 90s who died, and I said some prayers there. But then I spent an hour with the family, and when something like that happens, the center cannot hold, and there was an incredibly intricate, difficult and challenging time when this family spoke to me about domestic violence, but also about reconciliation, about hope and love and yearning. So this phrase, the center cannot hold, that is often quoted so blindly, is quite a challenge, but also an encouragement to us. How can we hold our center? How can we help hold the center for other people as well? You see, particularly in the second stanza, and it was written in this way. Originally, there was a kind of a slightly different stance where commentators think that W.B. Yeats was also including the French Revolution and the American Civil War, which again were an incredible ripping apart of society. Remember, and this is Remembrance Sunday as well, that W.B. Yeats had experienced the industrial nature of a terrible war in the First World War that continues to impact on our society. I'm reminded with the pieces of ordnance that lie here in Norwood about the impact that they had with that bringing back of those weapons there. What do we make about the Egyptian desert? Well, that's a whole other area to explore. What does this really mean? But I'd like to concentrate so that there can be the mystery of the Sphinx here that our author may be referring to. But W.B. Yeats, and I think this is particularly interested in terms of his own spiritual journey of discovery and of going to the margins, is what he calls the Spiritus Mundi. Can you see that? When a vast image out of Spiritus Mundi. So what does this suggest? Well, commentators suggest this is a kind of a storehouse of obtained in Western culture that we have become disconnected from. We've become disconnected from our center of our own ancestry. It's a spirit of modernity that trashes the past without any sense of any collective interaction and conversation about the past. And I'm not suggesting one thing or the other, particularly with Black Lives Matters, but how do we critically enter the past and explore it with empathy as well as with criticism? How do we draw wealth from it as well as understand that terrible things happen then as now? In a certain sense, Christianity has been slowly dying, probably since the end of the 19th century, in its sense of connection with the society of which we're a part. The images that certainly myself and perhaps you have grown up with and cherish or have a love-hate relationship are receding in our world. But Carl Jung reminded us that unless we connect with our own images and our own stories, the collective unconscious, they will turn into our pathologies. And I don't need to kind of add any more, I think, to illuminate that in our current world. So drawing a few of these themes together, and even though today we might say it's fashionable to say we can make of the text of what we will, irrespective of what the author intended, in a certain sense, perhaps when we do write poetry or create music, it's always beyond us. We're never really quite sure what it is that we are creating. But how might we respond to this today to move us, as I've suggested, from maybe our collective and individual sense of disease more towards a sense of flourishing? Well, let's go back to the first verse. This fantastic image of the wildness of the peregrine falcon. I don't know if you've ever been to see a falconry centre or seen falcons flown. The sense of not being able to listen to the falconer who is guiding and supporting the falcon as she soars. The falcon is always the female, of course. So here is the falconing circling in this vortex. And I'm reminded here of another image in Rilke, where he talks about circling and circling like a wild hawk around the dark tower of God. This maybe says to me, and maybe to you, is that how do we listen to the wildness in our own soul, the untamed sense of who we are? Yes, that wildness can be destructive and ugly and difficult, but there is a wildness of our yearning. And sometimes in progressive or liberal religious communities, we're so allergic to the enthusiasm and speaking in tongues and the kind of exuberant spirituality and pathological Christianity, that perhaps we lose sense of the wild yearning of our spiritual journey. How do we bring that into a process of listening to our heart, listening to ourselves, but also listening to one another, our wild yearnings, as we gather together in community, both the community here on podcast and dialoguing with us and those here in this meeting house? So to listen well, how do we also nurture and create a sense of our own inner centre? Well, we've explored some things already this morning. Humming can be a beautiful thing to do. Walking outside in nature, listening to music, particularly that which has a meditative quote, sense of beauty about it. Not doom scrolling through our Twitter feed, which is what I sometimes do way too much. Meditation. I teach meditation at the hospital. Speaking with friends. Reading poetry, engaging in philosophy, all of these cultivation practices maintain a sense of inner centre. They build up a sense of inner resourcefulness that YouTube and the internet and other things outside of ourselves that we cannot bring in and connect with our heart can give us a sense of inner resourcing, so that when the tide comes along, we will be prepared. Just as a side note here, because I know there are medical people here, I tweeted the other day that I've just been fit tested for my new P45 mask, because I do go into infectious people. But that brought a bit of a groan from some senior doctors who follow me on Twitter from Victoria and New South Wales who simply have not been well equipped with PPE and those masks. Why is the chaplain being fitted? We haven't been fitted. So there's a lot which is wrong there as well. Stemming the tide means that we have to bring deep compassion and empathy from our inner center. And what about our own convictions here? The best lack all conviction, while the worst are full of passionate intensity. Wow. Wow. Well, think about ourselves. What are our own convictions? When the rubber hits the road, what are the things that guide us along? We don't want too much passionate intensity, which is disconnected from a sense of inner conviction. But as part of this Unitarian Universalist community, which I regard myself as a member somewhat on the edge because I belong to other religious communities as well, I really love that wheel of spiritual practice that holds us together in community. That's a very strong thing. A wheel is a very strong thing indeed. And we too, I think, can have that sense that we can become in our society a community of resistance. So just gathering our thoughts into a conclusion now, I'm reminded of that Quaker phrase, let your life speak, let your life speak. And W.B. Yeats, in the middle of the doom scrolling of his own time and the beast slouching to Bethlehem to be born, which I think says a lot about our contemporary world and our fears. First of all, let us listen with care, listen to our wild nature, listen to ourselves, but also be a person who listens and watches with discrimination. I'm using this word discrimination in its proper sense. Choose what we listen to. Care for ourselves. Care for our own inner nature and our community. Secondly, keep the balance. Keep your center. And in this community, let there be the inhalation and the exhalation. The inhalation of spiritual practices that resource us and the exhalation of social justice and social care. And in all the horror of things, which is illustrated by this poem, do what you can to avoid extremes. Keep mature and avoid that slouching. Stand up straight. Be who you are and move well, which is another way of saying exercise that balance, that eudaimonia that the Greek philosophers talked about. And in the event of the rapture, this car may be unattended, but very happy for that passenger to go to their own little private department of religious enthusiasm. And I prefer to stick it out here in this one beautiful, wild and gorgeous life, to misquote Mary Oliver. So here's a question that I'm going to put up on the screen, and I'm going to be tedious and read the PowerPoint for our podcasters. What will I do today and into the future to sculpt a life of eudaimonia, flourishing, wellness and balance in the midst of the storm? So a few minutes silence now, and we'll gaze on the image that's on the screen of these Egyptian lotuses. And why is the lotus an image of spiritual practice? Well, they're beautiful and they focus on the sun, but their roots are in the silt and the mud and the slime. When our focus is toward a principle of relatedness and oneness and away from fragmentation and isolation, health ensues. Larry Dossey. Let's read this together. Grant us the peace that brings a transformation, clothing our minds, renewing thought and word, born out of love and reconciliation, peace to bring hope to a worn and weary world. Let peace be our prayer, peace be our yearning. And now we hear our postlude. Thank you very much indeed, Margaret, and I'm sure I speak for others in saying how much your music has ministered to us today.
Well, we hope you enjoyed this Expanding Horizons podcast. These podcasts are the intellectual property of the presenter. They can be used only with the express permission and appropriate acknowledgement of the presenter and the podcast used in its entirety. This permission can be obtained by emailing unitarianSA@bigpond.com. Please feel free to leave a comment or visit us on Facebook or Twitter by searching SA Unitarians.